Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back at 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Carol Kipler, ladies and gentlemen, is a new friend. Carol is the founder of Courageous Recovery, vision of Kipler Communications, and her organization is designed to raise awareness and to remove the stigma of mental illness, and that's what she's here to talk to us about today. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thanks for the invitation.
It's good to have you here. Before you got here on the previous segment, as you know, this is the Small Business Advocate Show. We talk about things that are important to small business owners, like how to run a business, how to start a business, how to grow a business, how to manage employees, how to get more customers, how to make a profit, et cetera, et cetera. But many times during the week or month or the year, we talk about other things that aren't directly connected to the business, but are, but maybe they are actually directly connected, but they're the humanity things, things like family and things like the spirit of the owner and the interconnectedness of the human beings in the organization all the way through to the customer. And mental illness is something that happens in the lives of small businesses. It happens to the owners. It happens to their families. It happens to their employees. And I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about you not only are working in this field, you actually have had mental illness, and I'd like for you to talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. I was a part-time college professor at the time. Had three wonderful, healthy children, a loving husband, a beautiful home and money in the bank, when the beast, as I call it, clinical depression, brought me to my knees. Came out of nowhere,
pardon me, Carol, tell us what clinical depression means.
A clinical depression is not like a situational depression. A situational depression is brought on by some kind of a trauma in one's life, a financial issue. It could be brought on by loss of a loved one.
Right. A relationship. Or
a relationship breaking down, all of those kinds of things.
Business failure. That happens to small
businesses. Oh, yeah. Business failure, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Something that's like threatening your life. Clinical depression is a depression brought on by a chemical imbalance. It comes for no reason other than the chemicals in your brain have changed. Stop producing serotonin and dopamine. And so I was going on my way, and it brought me to my knees. And because of the clinical depression, I was hospitalized because my depression slides into psychosis, which is losing touch of reality, to the point where I believe we're going to be financially ruined, and I stop eating because I'm thinking, what kind of mother would take food out of her children's mouth
and stop eating. And absolutely no basis for that belief.
That's correct. No basis for it to come other than a chemical imbalance.
I have known people who, more than one person, who highly successful, just very intelligent professionals. I'm talking, terminal degrees in education.
Right.
And just over a period of time would determine that they weren't capable, they were totally inadequate. One individual that I remember literally turned in his resignation.
Mm-hmm.
And said, I quit. I'm not going to do this anymore. Obviously, I'm not good at what I do or whatever. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness his boss said, I'm not accepting your resignation. There's something wrong with you. Go to the doctor.
Exactly.
And he went to the doctor, and he had a chemical imbalance.
Yeah. What happens, Jim, is the depression overtakes your entire well-being. Because you can't concentrate anymore, because you can't focus, you have racing thoughts, the first thing that goes with that is your self-esteem. I recall vividly thinking, I'm a fake up here in front of my class. Mm-hmm. If my dean ever found out how little I knew, I would lose my job.
Right.
So, yes, that is part of the clinical depression.
Now that we understand a little bit about it, and I don't want you to try to make us experts today, we'll get you back over in the future, and maybe you can help us become more experts. The challenge that folks like you have had and have, and people who have this kind of a condition, is more than just the disease itself, but it's also the people around you who might not understand what's going on.
That's correct. That's why the stigma is so prevalent when it comes to clinical depression. I know that my own parents wanted to know when I became ill what they had done to me in my childhood. My sisters thought, oh my goodness, maybe she was molested as a child. Maybe I had a hit-and-run accident. Maybe I did something horrible at work and that this is what was going on in my head, when in actuality it was none of that.
Nothing. You didn't do anything. There was no external forces. It was strictly something that happened to your body.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And it can happen to any one of us, and people don't realize that if you have a predisposition, because clinical depression is absolutely genetic, and if you have a predisposition towards clinical depression, it can come on at any point in your life.
I've seen that as well. I've seen those similar conditions manifest in children.
Oh, and we're seeing it more and more in children.
Yeah.
And the reason we're seeing it more is because we know more than we have ever known about biological brain disorders.
Is the general public more educated on this now? Are they more understanding? Are they quicker to get to the issue that this is not a weakness of this person? This person didn't do anything wrong. This is a medical condition that needs to be treated. Are we better about that or not?
In my opinion, no, we are not better about that. And the reason I say that is because even our medical professionals, our healthcare professionals, really are still prejudiced against people with mental illness.
Really?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
When I go into medical schools and nursing schools, I am absolutely appalled when I get in there and I spend about 2 or 3 hours with them talking about mental illness and what it means to live with mental illness, and they literally sit and tell me they never knew you could recover or live periods of recovery. They tell me they learn more about mental illness with me in 3 hours than they do in a whole entire semester of psychiatric medicine.
Right.
So even our income... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do people with clinical depression get lumped into the same category with people who are born with schizophrenia and things like that?
Yes, they do.
Hold on to that thought. We're going to come right back, folks. Carol Kibler is our guest and our new friend. We're talking about clinical depression primarily and the factors around it. And we've got a lot more to come right after these messages. It's 20 after. Stay with us.
Your night. Now it's time to go home. And he makes it fast. With one more thing.
Yeah. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Carol Kibler is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, and she is the founder of Courageous Recovery, a division of Kibler Communications. And Carol, you want to give us a website, please?
Sure. My website is www.courageousrecovery.com.
What do we find when we get there?
What you'll find is a homepage which will give you my background in the mental health field, and it'll tell you a little bit about my first business, Kibler Communications. It'll also, if you scroll down a little bit, you'll be able to take a quiz, online quiz, on your assumptions when it comes to mental illness.
What if we wonder if we have mental illness? What if we are not sure, we think we might have clinical depression or some kind of depression? Will we find anything out about ourselves when we take that quiz?
You might find a little bit out, but you to really find out about whether or not you have clinical depression, you can go to the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and they have it's NAMI.org, and you could actually take some online assessments to see if you, in fact, have some of the symptoms of either clinical depression or bipolar disorder or even schizophrenia.
Right. NAMI.org.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, folks, check that out if you feel that you need to. That's a resource that'll be beneficial to you. You know, Carol, small business owners, really have a challenge because a lot of the things you described earlier that you said you felt in as a result of your clinical depression are things that we feel quite often in our business. And the challenge we have is when to know when it's real and when to know when we've got a chemical imbalance. You got any ideas for us?
I do have some ideas for you. If you have disruptive sleep patterns for more than 2 weeks, if you are
disruptive,
feeling,
you mean you just can't get a good night's sleep?
Or
insomnia.
I'm talking about racing thoughts. Your thoughts don't shut down. You go from one thought to another thought all night long without it really resting or falling in and out of very light sleep instead of getting into that deep REM sleep. If that starts to happen, if your ability to concentrate, even read a sentence and comprehend what you've read, if you see that you have drastic changes in your appetite, you're either eating too much or not eating enough, these are real flares for you to pay attention to and to seek medical attention.
And folks, Carol, not only is a professional, this is a life she has lived. And I don't know, Carol, is it maybe a life you still live?
Oh, yeah, it is a life. Clinical depression doesn't go away. It's not curable. It's
like
manageable.
Like alcoholism, it's with you for the rest of your life.
That's correct. It is manageable. And I will tell you, Jim, even with taking the medication and following my doctor's orders, I have had 3 additional bouts of clinical depression over the last 16 years.
Hmm.
Each of those bouts...
While you were being medicated, it overwhelmed the medication?
Correct.
Wow.
The medication can only keep it a bay for so long, and then either my body gets accustomed to the medication, it stops working, and I become psychotic and have to be hospitalized again.
And so then you have to find a new medicine. Thank God that they have new medicines.
Well, not only thank God they have new medicines, but what works for me is ECT, better known as shock treatment.
Really?
Yes, and I know that most...
I thought that was an arcane...
Here you go. I know that most of your listeners think of ECT as one flew over the cuckoo's nest.
Well, but I don't mean to be insensitive. I thought we'd move beyond that with new capabilities.
Believe it or not, Jim, it's one of the best-kept secrets. 80% of people that receive ECT do, in fact, come into a level of recovery, where only 45 to 55% of people on medication get to a level of recovery.
Wow.
So it is...
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is... Well, I like to demystify ECT.
I'm glad you've done that here. As scary as it sounds, if it's effective, you know, nobody likes surgery either, but sometimes we have to have it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, can I just take a second and tell you what ECT is? Because I'll break a lot of myths by doing this.
Go ahead.
Okay, ECT is they're actually going to put your brain into a grand mal seizure. And the reason they want to do that
is... Like an epileptic seizure.
Yes, an epileptic seizure. And the reason they do that is to jolt the neurotransmitters in your brain to start transmitting again and to connect with the other transmitters. And what it is you have anesthesia. They put probes on your head after you're put to sleep. They put you into a grand mal seizure. They put a mouthpiece in so that you don't hurt your teeth or your tongue. And the procedure takes anywhere from 2 minutes to 5 minutes, and within a half an hour you're awake again. So it's a very
does it hurt?
Quick and dirty way. It does not hurt. You wake up, you're exhausted.
No residuals.
There are some residuals. You wake up, you're exhausted. You have a little bit of a headache.
Right.
The biggest side effect of ECT is loss of short-term memory for
right.
a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And within 3 months, my short-term memory returns.
Mm-hmm. Right. Carol, we've run out of time. There's a lot more that you can teach us. Will you come back?
You bet I will.
Well, I've enjoyed this information you've given us, and I want you to know that I admire your courage.
Well, thank you.
And
I appreciate
bringing
that.
To folks, you do a very important work, and I'm looking forward to getting you back again. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Quick break, right back with our good friend Grace Marie Turner. We're going to talk more about healthcare, but a different type of approach to healthcare, the public policy side. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.